LGIM Talks is produced by Legal & General Investment Management, providing you with the investment ideas we just can't stop talking about. This podcast assumes a certain level of knowledge of financial markets and is intended for investment professionals.
Hello and welcome to our podcast on cashflow matching. My name's Toby Orpin, a Senior Solutions Distribution Manager at Legal & General Investment Management. And I'm joined here by my colleague Graham Moles, who's a co-head of Solution Strategy.
Hi there.
Historically, cash flow has not been much of an issue for pension schemes, as they've generally been less mature. However, now, and we're seeing pension schemes maturing, a lot of them are turning cash flow negative, or have indeed already turned cash flow negative. So, Graham, how have schemes addressed the cash flow issue today? Cash flow matching seems to be popular.
Yeah, thanks, Toby. I think it's, as you say there, a lot of schemes are not actually cash flow negative yet. A large majority have begun to become cash flow negative, but it's a relatively small problem for some schemes. For the more mature schemes, where it has become more of an issue, a lot of sort of the in-vogue talking conversation points have been around cash flow matching, or CDI, which is cash flow-driven investing, is the other name for it within the industry. In its simplest form, this is effectively lining up the asset cash flows with the liability payments, so that the asset payments like coupons and redemption payments occur at the same time as liability payments. We would say, though, that one of the things that probably isn't talked about enough at the moment is the caution around that. So the liability payments aren't actually known with the level of certainty that perhaps people might assume. So there is longevity risk within the liabilities. There is often a complex inflation linkage that cannot be perfectly hedged, which means these payments simply aren't certain. In addition to that, a cash flow matching strategy, almost by definition, is a very long-term strategy. This is lining up asset payments that meet liabilities very long way out in the future. So a risk that trustees need to take into consideration and their advisors is what happens if the sponsor goes bust within that period. To give you an example, probably a very well-funded scheme, such as a gilt fully funded scheme, if this scheme was to do a cash flow matching strategy using, say, government bonds, that would seem like a very low-risk strategy, that you'd have cash flows as they fall due and there's very little investment risk there. If the sponsor was to go bust and the buyout funding level was not 100%, the scheme members would actually have to take quite a big haircut. So it's quite a large risk to consider.
So, Graham, you talk about aligning the cash flows to meet expected payments. How important is this, this proactive stance you take here?
Well, the key benefit of this strategy is that you don't need to be a forced seller. So picking on corporate bonds as an example, because that's an often used asset class within cash flow matching or CDI, during the credit crisis, the market value of those instruments fell by around about 30%. And indeed, transaction costs increased by sort of a factor of 3 or 4. So it was very expensive to meet a liability payment by selling corporate bonds, particularly if you see what happened after the credit crisis is that actually very few of those bonds defaulted. So if, as a scheme, you had been able to hold on to those bonds for the long term and wait until that bond matured, you could have seen a significant increase in value back to the original value, and you wouldn't have suffered that 30% loss. So it's very important from that respect. But one thing that we would sort of, again, a note of caution is that this is for the better funded schemes. If schemes are less well funded, this is less of an issue. And indeed, asset allocation becomes the key consideration.
A few more issues to address first there, yeah. So far, you've really only addressed pensioner payments. Is this all the pension or the cash flows that pension schemes need to consider? Are there other payments they have to make?
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of other payments that could occur. So recently there's been a lot in the press about transfer values and people taking their sort of pension as a cash sum. There are derivative payments that could be linked to, say, the LDI book. So if you have a movement in interest rates or inflation, you might need to put extra money into your LDI pot. And so, again, if you have a strategy purely of cash flow matching and one of those payments arises, then you may have to sell the assets earlier than you had anticipated and you end up back in the same problem you were beforehand, where you're a forced seller. So one way around this is that schemes can potentially hold a small cash buffer. That buffer doesn't have to necessarily be in cash. It could also be in an absolute return strategy that would look to sort of not have any particular market direction, so unlikely to be at a loss when there's a market downturn. Or it could simply be ensuring there is enough headroom in the LDI portfolio to take a bit of extra cash out there when needed. One of the things, though, that really becomes prevalent when we're talking about cash flow matching is if the asset itself is very difficult to sell. So illiquid investments have become very popular because they might offer an increased level of yield. They offer some inflation protection, and these are both very important things for a scheme. But if you need to sell the assets because there has been a transfer value, or, for example, the scheme is going to have to wind up because the sponsor has gone bust, those illiquid assets could become a bit of a problem. So can you sell them? Will an insurance company take them? These are all considerations that need to be factored into the asset allocation decision. It's not to say that we shouldn't use them. It's just the case that there needs to be an element of caution around that.
So that's an interesting point. You spoke about schemes that aren't as well funded, maybe looking for extra yield, going to illiquids. Are there any other options that schemes have there that are looking to broadly match these cash flows but maybe can't do it as precisely?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. So almost every single asset class in the world will actually produce some form of cash flow. So equities, for example, produce dividends, property produces rent, corporate bonds produce coupons. And largely when people are talking about cash flow matching strategy, they're talking about bonds and what is so-called contractual cash flows. But actually, if we take a look at equity dividends historically, and certainly within the developed market, they've actually been pretty stable. So over the last 40 years, the sort of consistency of the pound amount paid in dividends is pretty stable. So they should be allowed for within a cash flow planning approach, in my view. Also, this point about contractual really is only as reliable as the person who's issued that promise. So in the bond case, it's the company that's issued it. But based on some of the loans that I've made to my friends, certainly the fact that they're contractual doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to get my money back.
Not knowing your friends, Graham, that's probably the case. So pension schemes looking for this extra cash flow, we often talk about the difference between cash flow and income. What are some of the pitfalls of actually targeting higher income portfolios and to pay these cash flows?
Yeah, I think I sort of alluded to a little bit earlier, but strategic asset allocation really is the key factor here. So you definitely don't want to be sort of chasing a cash flow oriented strategy at the detriment of your asset allocation. So if you're not well funded enough to afford cash flow matching, don't do it would be the sort of the wording that we would suggest. It's a real benefit to reduce this risk of being a forced seller. But if it forces you into, you know, one or two single asset classes, then that sort of detriment to the diversification can become really critical. And so the key message really is don't put all your eggs in one basket, both across the asset classes, so well diversified at the asset class level, but also within individual asset classes. So focusing on, for example, a higher income equity strategy can lead you to some very high concentrations in individual companies that just don't provide the benefit of the income over the diversification. It's just not worth it.
It shouldn't be tail wagging the dog, I think, in that case. Very much focus on the strategic asset allocation, as you say, first, and make sure the cash flows work for the scheme second.
Absolutely.
It's certainly clear that cash flow planning and liquidity management is quickly moving up clients' agendas. I think the key takeaways from this, from our perspective, are asset allocation is key. Certainly, the diversification should not be compromised in clients' portfolios. There's actually lots of sources of cash flow that clients can get access to via alternative asset classes and different asset classes. So the decision is where your client is on your funding level should really help you think about the cash flows you can get. So that's it from us. So thank you very much, Graham, for joining us today.
Thanks, Toby.
And thank you. Bye-bye.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in Legal & General investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.